Hello, tapeworms. Are you guys as in love with geek culture as I am? Sci-fi, I mean like Star Wars, Harry Potter, Star Trek, D&D, video game-inspired clothing and apparel? Well, we are here to help you get it. This stuff is fun as hell, and you're going to see something you want, I guarantee it. Here's what you do. You go over to BustedTees.com. BustedTees, that's T-E-E-S as in t-shirts, .com. Shop all their amazing stuff. Grab a hat, grab some socks, grab a shirt, whatever. Then at checkout, you enter our code, which I will give you. So take note right now. Our code is Jason25945. That is my name, Jason, and the number 25945. Do that for 20% off all your geek attire. Go over to BustedTees.com and be awesome. That's BustedTees.com. Designs that pop culture.
One more time.
Can you sing Believe by Cher real quick?
I believe in love, after love.
Could I get you to say California Love for me?
California Love.
That's pretty good, man. Yeah, it's pretty good, Cap.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds. Who has a mixtape? Who needs a mixtape? Who makes a mixtape? Who needs a mixtape? You do, do. Don't you want to listen to our mixtape? Sing along and clap to the beat. Settle in and listen to our mixtape. And now the music vanishes. Enjoy your hot dog sandwiches.
What is up, everybody? It is I, Jason Emmett, welcoming you to another edition of The Mixtape. We are about to set off into an incredible journey over the next few weeks where we get to talk about rap music. We've done a couple of rap episodes in the past, and you guys really seem to like them. So we're giving them to you again. 80s this week, 90s next week, 2000 the week after. Then we're going to round out October. We're going to round out the month of October with our Halloween mixtape episode. If you guys want to get in your picks for Halloween music, what you would put on a Halloween mixtape, can be from the 70s, 80s, 90s, early 2000s, doesn't matter. Send them on over. You know, I'm about to give you social media stuff, and in that's going to be an email link and a Facebook thing and a Twitter thing and an Instagram thing. You can tell us on any of those, and we're going to add them. We're going to mention them on the show and all that good stuff. Hey, I'm going to be at Scarefest weekend coming up in Lexington here in a couple of weeks. My wife, Melissa, and sometimes co-host Stewie D, we're all going to be up there. If you guys can make it out to Scarefest weekend in Lexington, come out, look for us. I'm sure you'll find us, but I'll probably be wearing a mixtape hat. Actually, we may be dressed up, so look for Ted Lasso and Coach Beard. That'll be my wife and myself. I'm not sure, but we probably will be dressed up because I think we're going to a party that night. I'm not 100% sure, but you should still come out and you should find us and say hey and hang out and, you know, see all the cool shit that there is to see out there and get some autographs and stuff. So you should do that. Again, we're about to drop our social media stuff. Please pay attention and interact with us because we love you and we miss you and we want to talk to you and stuff. So please do. Dropped a interview. There's an interview that came out right before this. First of all, we dropped the Pat Fraley interview, a little over a week ago. You guys seem to really enjoy that one. If you haven't listened to that, go back and check it out. Pat Fraley is a voiceover artist He's worked on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Brave Star and Denver the Last Dinosaur and Tailspin and Toy Story and just a bunch of other stuff. We've talked about it to death here on the show because we were super excited to talk to Pat. So go check that one out. But if you haven't caught it yet, there is an interview with Kevin Eastman, he of Eastman and Laird, he of the creators of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And it was awesome, and we were humbled and just so privileged to have the opportunity to speak with one of my childhood heroes. It was amazing, and it just meant so much to me. So please go check out that interview and check out his stuff online. Kevin Eastman Studios, you can get some really cool stuff over there. I've bought stuff off of there. It's wonderful. We're going to be talking about it more because it's going to launch within the next week to 2 weeks. Our Patreon page. Again, we've mentioned it here on the show. It's not going to be anything mind-blowing or anything. The price isn't going to like gouge or anything. But we are going to offer a subscription thing. You're still going to get 4 episodes a month here for free. So no worries if that's what you're looking for. What we are going to give you is a bonus episode every month. Maybe some bonus material here and there on top of that. And no ads at the beginning of the show. So if you're interested in that, please be paying attention. We will let you know as soon as that rolls out. And there will be more details available on the website and through social media and all of that goody good stuff. Hey, if you are either associated with anybody that runs a con, or you are run a con of some sort, or by con we mean convention, please don't be trying to pull a fast one on us. No, seriously, though, if you are at all involved with a convention, or you run one, or you're part of one, or you know someone who runs one, let us know. We'd love to give them some promotion here on the show and possibly talk to them, maybe give them a little exposure. We love doing that. We love pop culture in any form. It's what we do here. That's why we go to these cons and stuff ourselves, and hopefully you guys visit them too. Stores, toy stores, or pop culture stores of any kind, comic book shops. Maybe they do a clothing line. Maybe they've written a book. We don't care. Let us know about them or tell them to get in touch with us. We would love to talk to them for a few minutes and give them a little promotion on the show and check out what they do. We've talked about it here on the show. It's something we really want to offer a way to give back to the community that has given so much to us. Once again, if you guys have a second, please leave us a review and share the show. Very simple stuff. You just go onto whatever podcast you listen through. There'll be a little thing to rate the show. Click it at the highest you can. If you can get it higher than that, do that too. But take a second, click that, submit it. It helps us a ton. And really, it's just one of the coolest things you can do for us to help the show. And it only takes you a few seconds. And once you've done it, you're done. Unless you want to go to all the podcatchers in turn and leave one. And that would be awesome because, you know, yeah, do that. Hey, I'm going to stop talking now because we have to get into rap. But I need to tell you a couple of things first. Probably heard some weird, you know, if you ever listen to our pre-show openers that I tack on there, this one was a little goofy this week. We definitely had some audio glitches, not from my end where things get recorded, but the interwebs were just acting up. You won't notice a big gap in the show. Maybe there won't be a gap in the show for you, but we definitely had some audio glitches. We fixed them, so they're not really there a whole lot. But if things seem a little off kilter, that's why. Also, man, we hadn't recorded in a few weeks. We were ahead, and there's been a lot of weird stuff going on here. So we were ahead. Thank God we were. I was a little off my game, guys, and I apologize for that. Please don't be too hard on me. So just know all of that going in, but we're about to talk about some serious 80s rap, and hopefully you guys enjoy this. So join us here for this fun and exciting adventure, and we'll be right back after these words from us. What's up, gang? Jason Emmett here, and we're about to give you our social media information with the quickness so that you can contact us and be a part of the show. First, we have a website, themixtapeshow.com. Head over there, find out all the good stuff you want, links to everything, interviews, playlists, places you can leave us a review. It's all there on the website, including direct links to our Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, and YouTube. We also have a phone number, and you can leave us a voicemail. You should leave us a voicemail. That number is 513-437-2377. Easiest way to remember it, 513-HE-RAD-77. Hey, if you've been listening to the show for a while, I don't know if you're listening through iTunes or Pandora or Spotify. It doesn't really matter. If you could take like 30 seconds, click that little review bar, we would greatly appreciate it. We love you, so please, it helps.
Please share the show with your friends. We would greatly appreciate that as well.
And that's it. That's all I'm giving you right now. We're going to go ahead and kick into this week's episode.
We love you.
Welcome back, boys and girls. We are here to present yet another episode of The Mixtape. I'm Jason Emmett.
I'm Casey Masterpiece.
And I'm Twisted Kid Matt.
And we're talking about rap today. Yay!
Yeah. He's so excited, dude. That's right. We're going to do a month of rap for you guys. We're going to start with the 80s. We're going to go into the 90s. And, of course, the first decade of the 2000s. Well, we did some previous rap episodes in the past, and they did really well. And I think I know why, because like when we start and you guys send your lists, and it's one of those things where I pull my list and I'm like, yeah, this is good. And then one of you guys send something, I'm like, fuck, why didn't I think of that? Like, that's so good. Matt, who took forever to give me his list this time around, it's okay, Matt. I forgive you because like one of the tracks.
He literally asked me probably about 30 times. And I was like, ah, I keep forgetting.
We would all text each other and like it would be like, so, what you guys did this weekend? Oh, I went to dinner. I'm like, oh, where'd you go? Like, I went to this place. Did you have a burger? Yeah. Rap list.
Yeah. You just throw it in conversation. I'm like, damn it, I forgot. Okay, I'll get it to you tomorrow. Yeah,
but
tomorrow.
It's okay. We're actually going to start with Matt's list this week. And Matt dropped one on, and I was so mad. Like, they were a band I freaking loved. Like, still love. I have things to say about this particular song, as it were. And
like, you totally forgot about putting it on your list.
Totally forgot until it. And that's one of the wonderful things about this show is you forget how much music there is out there and how much you listen to till somebody drops something on you. And you're like, oh, yeah, shit, yeah, that's wonderful. And, yeah. And Matt started with that this week. So let's go ahead and get right into it, man. And we're going to start with that song, the one that I was like, damn it. Why didn't I think of that? And this is Matt's first pick. It's the Fat Boys, man. Fat Boys are back.
Hell yeah.
I love the Fat Boys so much, and I never thought to put them on a list, and I don't know why. I actually own the 45 of this song on vinyl. Nice. So I don't know why I didn't think of it, but this is Fat Boys Are Back, title track off their second album. Fat Boys are just fun. Like,
agreed.
If you don't, like, I probably wouldn't have put this song on there, but like, I love their version of The Twist with Chubby Checker.
Yeah. That's
and
pretty good too.
And Wipeout. Yeah. Like, they did the Wipeout with the Beach Boys, and it's fun as hell too. If you guys aren't familiar with the Fat Boys, you should go back and check them out. They're one of the things that makes the 80s rap so much different than a lot of the other generations is, and first of all, we should probably talk about the fact that rap as a sort of form of popular music kind of started in the late 70s, right? And then the 80s is when it just sort of started to blossom, and you get bands in the 80s that didn't happen as much in the 90s and definitely not in the 2000s that were just fun. Like, there was a lot more fun rap. Next week we're going to be doing a 90s episode, and there are some things that we're going to bring up, and some specific artists and some of the cool stuff they did that was different than what a lot of other people were doing in the 90s. But in the 80s you got to have bands like the Fat Boys who were just there to have a good time. They even made a movie. For people in the 80s, it's kind of a beloved movie. I can't promise it's a good movie.
Oh, it's not good.
No. It's called Disorderlies, but it's a lot of fun for what it is. I mean, you know, Kid and Play, early 90s, they also had a couple of really fun, but not what I would consider to be great movies, but fun.
House Party 1 is a classic.
Yeah.
And the first House Party and Class Act, I really like.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
Class Act.
Yeah,
that became kind of a thing with like hip hop artists throughout the years,
and it was
Soul Plane,
and that's what I mean. I think
it may not be a great example, but
it was because they were so much fun, you know, and so we putting them in a comedy just made sense. Whereas it was weird to put guys like Ice Cube in a comedy, but somehow it worked.
Yeah, and now that's like all he does. Yeah,
it's somehow it worked. It worked for all of us a little bit. So Fat Boys are back. Title track off their second album. The album was produced by Curtis Blow. It came out in 1985. The album did well. It was certified gold. The song actually landed at 27 on the U.S. Hot R&B Hip Hop Singles Track Chart. Yeah, you know I hate saying that. It's when they put track chart together at the end. It just doesn't seem right to me. Everything they released was fun. Everything they released was a blast to listen to, which is exactly, you know, this song is pretty much exactly what you think it's about. It's them making their return for the new album. That's really all this song is about.
Yeah. Nothing can ever be whack.
There's really not a lot to say about it because the song isn't deep. There's like no deep meaning.
No.
They're singing about, we're back, we like to stuff our face, everybody get ready for us. Yeah. Here you go.
We're a big guy and one of us beatboxes. Mm-hmm.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
So Matt,
yeah,
you picked it though.
Yeah.
So what made you add this song to your mix this week?
I love Disorderlies. Yeah. I'm not even kidding. I loved that movie when I was growing up and watched it all the time. And, you know, that got me, you know, that's actually how I first heard of the Fat Boys. And I was like, these are guys that have albums. Okay, I'll listen to this.
Yeah.
And just the human beatbox aspect of it was just great. And everybody I know, both of you included, without even asking you, I guarantee you tried to beatbox like that guy.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Stick them.
Yeah. Brother D. Yeah.
You got to add a stick them in there every once in a while.
Yeah.
Or is you not? You know. That was pretty good. But can you do more than just one ha-ha?
No.
You got to be able to do like multiples.
Yeah. I don't have the breath control that he had.
I appreciate
it. Ray Parker Jr. is in Disorderlies?
Really?
That was very good.
Yeah, he plays the pizza delivery man. That was so I'm looking up the cast right now. Because I'm like, I know that the Ralph Bellamy, like he's in so many other things.
I like that Matt's
like the main guy that they're
Matt
in.
Sticks with a theme. It is such a thing with Matt. It's movies. Like, why'd you pick this movie?
Yeah.
It's like, I know it from the movies. It just shows a lot about us, man. It really does.
The Rick Nielsen from Cheap Trick is in Disorderlies.
That's kind of cool too. I haven't seen I've probably cameos. Not seen that movie since fucking 1989 or 1990s.
Yeah, I think the last time I saw it was like early
2000s. Yeah. But, yeah. There's also a character, Skinny Dipper number 2.
That was me. I remember watching that movie with my buddy Jim back in the day. Like, we just put it in. We were just fucking dying laughing, just thinking it was hilarious. And that would have been on VHS, my friends.
Oh, yeah.
Last time I watched Disorderlies was on VHS, so.
I probably watched it on, like, TBS or something, or, like, a TV edit. I probably haven't really seen Disorderlies.
The Supers.
You know, the Fat Boys, I don't think, really get enough credit as being, like, hip-hop pioneers as they should.
Well, I don't. I'll say I don't think they do in the commercial world. I think they do in the rap world, if that makes sense. Like, I think other artists respect them more, but I don't think they ever got sort of some of the acknowledgement they deserved from. I mean, commercially they did well, but I don't think people respect. I don't think they got the respect they deserved. If that, I think that's probably the way to kind of go. But you know what? I think they had a good time doing what they did. So
yeah, the Fat Boys are back, or at least I want to say one of them.
And you know,
one of them passed.
Yeah. And you know,
Damon Wimbley never be well. Appears to still be alive, aka Kool Rocksky.
Kool Rocksky,
and not only that, he has lost a lot of weight.
Yeah,
yeah, he got into the gym. So yeah. I mean, props to him.
His photos online do not look like he was ever a member of the Fat Boys.
Well, you know,
like just looks like he's the I worked out a lot. Boys.
That worked out a bit, boys.
Yeah.
Well, Matt has a thing for boys this week, so we're gonna go ahead and kick off his next.
I do.
You okay. Do. We're gonna kick off your next track, and also,
oh, yeah,
and also people having fun. So here you go.
Hell yeah.
Ladies! 1989, Beastie Boys.
With more cowbell.
I was at Five Below yesterday, and they're selling cowbells. And It's like, this is, first of all, this has to be obnoxious for the employees of the store. And
right. Oh, God, yeah.
So,
well, if you're working at Five Below, I think every day's got to be a little bit obnoxious.
Well, yeah. People like Matt and I come in a lot.
I was going to say, Matt being the most frequent customer there. And yes, I just spoke of myself in the third person.
So Matt has Hey Ladies by the Beastie Boys, 1989.
Yeah.
So this little ditty is basically just pickup lines delivered in a way only the Beastie Boys can deliver them. This song was off Paul's Boutique. This is their follow-up album to License the Ill, and this is a very important thing that happened here because this song helped to legitimize them. Because what happened is a lot of folks thought they might be a one-trick pony, that they had License the Ill and that was going to be it. Now, this is the only song off Paul's Boutique to land, but they had a habit of kind of doing that over their next few albums. They would have one track that just sort of blew up. And we're going to talk a little bit about the situation that happened with this. But this song landed at number 36 on the Billboard Hot 100. This was also the first song ever to hit top 20 on both the Billboard. I'm sorry, the first rap song to ever hit top 20 on both the Billboard Hot Rap chart at number 10 and the Modern Rock chart at number 18. So it kind of has that distinguished, you know, whatever you want to call it for doing that. I don't know words today, guys. But the fact that
words are difficult.
Words are hard. The fact that it was the first rap song to land on both those charts is kind of cool too. So this song was produced by the Dust Brothers and released by Capitol Records. Why is that important? Do you guys know why that's important? Why I even bring that up?
Dust Brothers, Spawn soundtrack. Going back to that. Yeah. I'm pretty sure on that.
Well, they had been with Def Jam Records and Rick Rubin prior, right?
Okay. And now I see where. Yeah.
So they left, even though they were still under contract, and they claimed that they were not receiving fair compensation for the work they were doing and that Rick Rubin was kind of screwing them over. And Rick Rubin kind of retaliated and kind of went at them and said, "You guys are a one-hit band. You're never going to do anything that anybody cares about ever again." And
then the Spawn soundtrack came out.
Dust Brothers, the Beastie Boys.
Oh, okay.
The Beastie Boys were with Def Jam. Yeah. And License to Ill was all produced by Rick Rubin and Def Jam Records. So Rick Rubin, the Beastie Boys were leaving saying, you're not paying us, like you're holding money and stuff. So they like broke contract and left. And Rick Rubin was like, you guys are going to tank. You're never going to be successful ever again.
Meanwhile, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right.
No album ever hit as hard as License to Ill did ever again. But like I said, they continue to have hit singles off most of their albums. Now, not to be outdone by a name we're going to see a bunch this week. This song sampled a bunch of different songs. Here are a few of them. Shake Your Pants by Cameo. Jungle Boogie, Kool and the Gang. Ballroom Blitz by Sweet. And Party really? Time by Curtis Blow. Just remember, because Curtis Blow is going to pop up this entire episode. So, very important. Matt, what made you pick Hey Ladies and add them to your mix this week?
Honestly, it was kind of hard to decide which Beastie Boys song to put on here, because I don't really know why, but at a very formative time in my life, I heard Beastie Boys and was just like, this is the greatest thing of all time. I'm still a Beastie Boys fan. I was actually such a Beastie Boys fan when I was a kid. I may have told this story on the show before, but when it came time to inevitably get my first pet, Betta Fish, you know, because every kid has one at some point in time, I named him Beastie. And yeah, so I had Beastie the Betta Fish named after the Beastie Boys. So. But yeah, Beastie Boys have always just been a big part of my life, and Hey Ladies is one of the catchiest songs of all time. And
I appreciate that you
that cowbell
went, like, and I would have, and I think we did talk on another episode. I think most people would have went to License to Ill, and I probably would have went to License to Ill. I think we talked about Paul Revere on an episode. I know we've talked about
that was
Fight
probably
for Your Right
me
to Party,
about that one.
But I appreciate that you went with Paul's Boutique instead and went with, you know, something that people are probably going to be like, oh yeah, shit, I love that song, but not the first one they're going to think of, which I think is kind of cool. Also, you know, we always said he sounded like, what's his Gavin.
Jerry Lewis.
Jerry Lewis. So yeah. The fact that he's yelling, hey, ladies.
Hey, ladies. There's got to be, there has to be a reason he said it like that, and it's probably Jerry Lewis.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm do the internet.
Do the internet. Well, while you go to the internets, we will go to your next track. This is all Matt's right. Third pick for his mix this week.
For me and Eric being a nice big plate of this, which is my favorite dish, but without no money, it's still a wish. Cause I don't like to dream about getting paid, so I dig into the books of the rhymes that I made. Soon as a test to see if I got pulled, hit the studio, cause I'm paid in full.
Akim, check this out. Yo, you go to your girl.
Paid in full, Eric B. and Rakim. I think when you talk 80s rap and you think of a very specific style, this is what a lot of us are going to think of. This the production on this song to me is wonderful, and it's really cool when we get into how that happened in the first place. So this is the title track from their 87 album. It was the fifth single from the album. So let's chat about it a little bit, because this is really cool. So Eric B. was spinning turntables, right, for a radio station, and he decided he needs to find a voice to add to his stuff. So he puts a call out. This is on WBLS in New York. And because of that call out, he puts looking for a voice, he meets Rakim. So they start recording tracks at Rakim's buddy's house, right? And Russell Simmons hears the track. Eric B. presents him, right? Or no, here's the track. Eric B. is president. I'm going to hit the button because I realize I just fucked that up really bad. So we're just going to go ahead and hit this track for me. Apparently, this is my first track of the week and every week. It's been a minute, guys.
It's been a while.
we haven't recorded in a few weeks, and I feel rusty, that's for sure. So Russell Simmons hears the track Eric B. is president, right? And he signs them like right there, right? And the record is set to be recorded over at Power Play Studios. So they do. They record this album at Power Play Studios, but not just at Power Play Studios. Part of it is recorded there. And you got to remember, this is 1987, guys. Part of it is recorded in Rakim's buddy's house. So I think that's really cool that they were doing double duty, part of it at the studio, part of it at their friend's house. One of the songs on the album is Paid in Full, and the track is given to this EDM group called Cold Cuts, and they do a remake of it, and that remake takes off, right? That remake is what most of you know. It's huge, right? Eric B. has called the track Girl Disco. He's not a big fan of the remix, but Rakim said it was the best remake he's ever heard. Either way, it doesn't really matter. People dug it. Number 65 on the U.S. Hot R&B Hip Hop chart. Number 2 in New Zealand. Number 5 in the Netherlands. Number 15 on the U.K. singles chart. But Matt,
yeah,
it was obviously number 1 in your heart. Why did you add this song to your mix this week?
You're going to hate me.
It's from a movie. What movie? Is it? Is this on? Is this in Crush Groove?
No. It's not even an 80s movie.
What is this in?
It's not even Eric B. and Rakim.
Crush Groove would have been before this, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's in Old School.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Yeah. Where Snoop Dogg covers it in the movie.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
That was the first time I had ever heard that song, and I was like, wait, this is kind of a cool song. I've never heard this Snoop Dogg song. I started looking into it, and I was like,
I didn't know there was a song from the
80s?
And yeah. I've seen Old School, but that's...
Yeah.
I need to check
If you go back out. And watch the scene where Snoop Dogg comes out and performs at the backyard party, he's doing Paid in Full.
Dude, that's nuts. Yeah. That's awesome, actually.
Yeah.
It's a great movie.
I love Snoop. And wink, wink, nod,
the
nod.
Fact that he...
Next week, 90s, I'm just saying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The fact that he took the time to, in my opinion, you know, pay tribute to a song that he probably grew up listening to.
Oh, yeah.
By doing that in the movie. I'm not sure what the story is behind why he did it in the movie. It could have been like, hey, would you do this? Or it was like,
did he
choose
to?
I'll do it, but I have to do this.
Yeah, that. And I'm kind of curious. That's pretty cool to know, though.
maybe one of the things that one of the reasons why Snoop Dogg, did that cover was to kind of help Eric B and Rakim out. I mean, I'm not sure how they're doing financially. I mean, could be doing like all right. It could be billionaires for all I know.
But we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Eric B, Rakim, are come on the show. Let us know if you're billionaires.
Yeah. Billionaires?
Are you billionaires?
Yeah. Let us know if you're all right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you get paid in full?
I hope so.
Yeah, I really
do. They did a lot for the rap world. So
yeah.
A lot of the people we're talking about this week, hopefully, and I think, again, in the rap world, on the rap side of things, from our other artists, I think they did get the respect they deserve. But hopefully they get the respect they deserve from the commercial end of things, if you catch my drift. Because that takes us into my list, and we are going, remember I said there's a certain name that's going to keep coming up this week? Well, my first pick, that name comes up. This is my first track. Like I said, you're going to hear Curtis Blow mentioned a lot this week, both as a producer and as an artist, and I picked him as an artist for this track right here.
Breaks on the stage, breaks on the screen, breaks to make your wallet lean. Nice. Breaks run cold and breaks run hot. Not, but these are the breaks. Break it up, break it up, break it up, break it down.
So this is The Breaks, Curtis Blow, 1980. I want everybody to just take a moment and like hear how early the music is. It's like very disco tech.
Yeah.
It's cool though, man. And it's funny because when you take what a lot of people consider to be one of the first commercially successful rap songs, which we have talked about here on the show before, and that's Rapper's Delight by Sugar Hill Gang, you hear similarities. Like they are there. And so you get to see where rap kind of found its roots as a commercial entity. I keep stressing that because it's important to understand that rap as an art was around before it was commercially successful. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about, when people started paying attention, it started hitting radio and airplay. We get to see it at its roots here in the very beginning in the sound, and we get to watch it morph, which is pretty cool. But this is The Breaks by Curtis Blow from 1980 off the album Curtis Blow. This one hit number 87 on the Billboard Hot 100. I'm just going to go ahead and spoil it now. I added the song to the mix because it was the first rap song to ever be certified gold. So it's kind of a big deal. It was also the second 12-inch single to earn a gold certification, and those two things helped cement rap as a legitimate genre of music. So Curtis Blow's impact on rap, like, cannot be denied. Like,
he's
a very, very important character. And I'm about to give you guys some really cool information. So the song was number 4 on the U.S. Billboard R&B chart and number 9 on the U.S. Billboard dance chart. In an interview, Curtis said that what is significant of The Breaks by Curtis Blow. He talks about what is significant. This is cool because I didn't know this stuff. I got schooled a little bit this week, and I was very happy. And I kind of want to know what you guys didn't know as far as this next bit goes. So he says, the concept was created as a tribute to all the breakers in and around the South Bronx and Harlem areas back in the early days of hip hop. I wanted to do a tribute song with many breaks so that the breakers could get down and do their thing. When we danced during the breaks of a song, that was our time to go off to do our best moves. It was also the success of this song which led Curtis Blow to be the first hip hop artist to interesting week.
The stroke.
This song was so successful, we're going to change it up. And because of that success, Curtis Blow was the first hip hop artist. Shut up. I know I said harp, and I don't care. He was the first hip hop artist to perform on Soul Train. I got it out. I got it. I did it. Damn it. This song was massively influential for rap, and Blow was one of those artists who paved the way. This is the tangent that I want to go on. This is the thing I did not know. Breaking or b-boying are the correct terms, and the term breakdancing is generally frowned upon as a term created by mainstream media. The original term arose to describe dancers who performed to DJ Kool Herc's breakbeats. The obvious connection is the word breakbeat, but DJ Kool Herc said breaking was slang for getting exciting, acting energetically, or causing a disturbance. The word breakdancing is used to cover the gamut of dances and incorrectly includes popping, locking, and electric boogaloo, which from what I understand was created by electric boogaloo, was actually created by Michael Chambers and his friends and family, which I thought was really cool.
So what you're saying, breaking is sort of the getting turnt of the 1980s.
Yes. Popping, right. Locking, electric boogaloo are not actually styles of breakdance, but are funk styles that developed separately from breaking in California. I didn't know that. Did you guys know that?
I had no clue. Learned something new. Matt?
There's a video of Tony Basil with a lot of the founding members of breaking.
Yes.
Including Boogaloo Shrimp and all that.
Yes. They were in a dance troupe together.
Yeah.
Michael Chambers.
Yeah. By the way, Tony Basil just turned 80.
That's amazing.
I feel old as fuck.
Yeah.
There's a documentary about it actually. Mm-hmm. That clip you're talking about, I believe, is from the documentary. And their troupe went on, they performed on all sorts of stuff together. Yep. Which was something I didn't know for a big chunk of my life, that Tony Basil and Michael Chambers. If you guys don't know who Michael Chambers is, Matt just referred to him as Boogaloo Shrimp. He just go watch Breakin' and Breakin' 2 Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah,
and
you can see Ice-T.
You do get to see Ice-T.
Before I became a cop on film.
But yeah.
Talking to guys who carry boxes for a living.
So as a kid, we've all made fun of it. Like, why is Breakin' 2 called Electric Boogaloo? And like, I literally never knew why. And now I know why, because Michael Chambers created a style of dance called Electric Boogaloo. Him and his family and his friends, it came from them. And he was little. He was a little dude. So they called him Boogaloo Shrimp. That was like one of his nicknames. So that's why it's called Electric Boogaloo. It's all really cool when you start interconnecting it. If you guys don't know who Tony Basil is, and I assume most people listening to this show do, you know her from Hey Mickey. You know, oh, Mickey, you're so pretty.
You're so fine.
Right. But most people thought she was a one-hit wonder, and that's actually not the case. She was, as far as music goes, but that wasn't her bread and butter. That wasn't her thing. She was a choreographer and has done some really cool stuff, including a little track called Once in a Lifetime. She did the choreography for David Byrne, although she says she finally just set up a camera and told him to do whatever he wanted in front of it, and he did. And I will say, we'll save that for the end of the show, but yeah, if you guys have not gone and seen Stop Making Sense, it's on at the theater, and trust me, you want to go see it.
Yeah.
So I just thought it was cool. I didn't know that there was a difference between breaking and breakdancing, and I didn't know that. Like, we've always just all encompassed called it breakdancing, but apparently that is not correct. So we learned you a little something on this show, at least. So that's pretty
entertaining and educational.
That's right. That's what we do here.
Yes.
When sometimes we're not screwing everything up. So something else is going to happen this week that I thought was really, really cool, because I got my list put together and then KC sent me his list, and we have a similar artist. But what's cool is we did not use the same song. I probably went a little more obvious than KC did. But here is my pick. Here's my next pick. So, Kev, be prepared. Mm-hmm. Here you go.
And terrorize us, the gangs that used to do it. Now they idolize us. Guns, we don't like to use them unless our enemies choose them. We prefer to fight you all like a man and beat you down with our hands. The body slam you at the Wild Wild West.
Hey, that's not Will Smith.
No. Will Smith is a huge fan and collaborator with Kool Moe Dee, though. So don't be surprised when you hear lots of similarities, including Nightmare on My Street. You probably heard a little bit of that in there.
That's actually what I thought was playing until. Yeah.
And then obviously Wild Wild West, which we'll get into here in a second. But this is Wild Wild West by Kool Moe Dee, 1987. And I loved this song. I was a huge fan of this song and of this video.
Mm-hmm.
I distinctly have memories of Kool Moe Dee and that long-ass duster walking down the street with his hat on his head.
Right. Like, very. And those big-ass shades. I mean, I'm not sure what to call those type of glasses, but it was like futuristic and like covered like half of his face.
He kind of had a Shownuff thing going on, just not.
Yeah.
It was like if Shownuff went from a samurai to an Old West guy. Because had those messed up glasses, and I like just this video has always stuck out in my head.
God, you know what's funny is those glasses nowadays, I believe, will be known as pit vipers.
Yeah,
it's they're very similar to pit vipers.
Yeah, but I guess now that you say it,
kind of looks like he just had cataract surgery.
Yeah,
yeah, kind of. Or they just dilated his pupils
yeah. really bad.
So this song was the second single off the album. How Do You Like Me Now, Kevin? And that might be a little foreshadowing, Kevin. those of us who were around in the 90s remember it being sampled by Will Smith for the film Wild Wild West. They actually performed that version with Drew Hill and Kool Moe Dee, so they all actually did it together, and that was 1999. So Kool Moe Dee is part of that, as is Drew Hill. This song was number 62 on the Hot Billboard 100, number 4 on the Billboard Hot R&B Hip Hop chart. What I like is how the song uses the Wild West as an analogy for the neighborhood that he grew up in, that he lived in. It talks about standing up to rival gangs, but using their fists rather than their guns to fight. This song's catchy as hell. Like I mentioned, the video stands out to me. Always did. In 87, I remember catching this on MTV and it just being like, it just for some reason, it just sunk in and I couldn't really forget about it. That's why I added this song to my mix this week. A lot of foreshadowing because I'm just going to break it now. Kevin's going to be talking about Kool Moe Dee as well, but he's going to do something that I don't know if he did intentionally or not. We're going to find out when we get to Kevin's list. But it's, Kev did some rivalry shit. We're going to go ahead into my last pick, and then we're going to get into Kevin's list. This one to me, well, I don't know. It just sort of had to be done, and I think you guys will understand why. I mean, Walk This Way, Run DMC Aerosmith, because it rocks, and it was a genre-bending song, and I chose this one, and it came from 1986. As we all know, Aerosmith was a huge band in the 70s, but their popularity was starting to falter a bit, which is weird if you think about it, because in the 90s, they were, once again, a huge band. And in the late 80s, huge band. But at this point, they were wavering. They weren't getting much attention. And we all know that this song helped revive their career. But let us discuss for just a second how that whole thing came about, shall we? Because I don't know if you guys know the story behind this, and it's kind of cool. So Run DMC had been freestyling over that opening hook of this song for a minute. You know, they've been out doing live performances and playing that and just freestyling over it. But they didn't know what the full song was until they were working on their album, Raising Hell, and producer Rick Rubin pulls out the album, Toys in the Attic, and he puts it on for him. And Rubin says, hey, since you guys have been freestyling over part of this song, you should just remake it. And Joseph Simmons and Daryl McDaniels are like, who the hell's Aerosmith? Wow. I'm serious, man.
Wow.
They claim they didn't even know who they were, which maybe makes sense depending on where they grew up and the neighborhoods and the music they were listening to. I guess I could see it. So Simmons and McDaniels, they're out. They're like, nah, we're not doing that. But thank God Jam Master Jay was kind of like, it's kind of a cool idea. Like maybe we should talk about this. So they do. They discuss it, and then they reach out to Steve Tyler and Joe Perry. And they say, yeah, we'll come and we'll do the vocals and the guitar part. I don't know if you guys know this, but if you watch the video, they are the only two members of Aerosmith in the band. The rest is not Aerosmith. It's only Joe Perry and Steve Tyler.
I had not paid attention to that. But
nah,
it's kind of weird to only have two of them.
Yeah. Well, they were like, we're just going to come in and rather than do the whole band, we're just going to cut. We'll do the vocals and the guitar for you guys. No problem. So all is well and good. But the song was never intended to be a single. It was just going to be a song on their album. But what happens is what kind of happens. The song starts getting played on the radio. Some DJ picks it up, and it starts being played on both rock radio stations and hip-hop radio stations, and people lose their shit. This version of the song charted higher than the 77 original version of Walk This Way. Hit number 4 on the Billboard chart, gave Run DMC their biggest hit ever while also reviving Aerosmith's career. It was also one of the first hip-hop songs to chart in the UK, hitting at number 8. I mentioned that it was number 4 on the US, in the US. It was number 8 in the UK. We also have the, number 6 in Canada, number 9 in Australia. The song was certified platinum in the US, UK, Italy. It was certified gold in Canada. It won them both a Soul Train Award. And what's really cool, and we did talk about this song once on the show, when we were talking about videos. We were talking about some of the biggest videos. This was a real early episode. And we talked about this next bit, that this song broke down barriers between two genres.
Oh, yeah.
And then they created a video that literally did that. That was the whole purpose of the video. Like, literally, we're going to break down the wall. We've got Aerosmith on one song trying to perform, and we've got Run DMC on the other side trying to perform, and they're getting irritated with each other, and instead they just break the wall down, literally, and perform together. It was massive, and this spurred something that would continue into music today, where hip-hop artists started merging first with rock musicians, which was genius, and then we started seeing it with country artists, and it's really cool to watch that happen. Oddly enough, aside from Tyler and Perry, like I said, the rest of the band were not actually in the video. You know, it is what it is. I don't think anybody expected it to become what it became, and it revived their career and also set Run DMC. I mean, they were already around before. They were already big before, but this really cemented everybody's career. So that's, for me, why it needed to be on the mix. It's just a very important song, very catchy-ass song. We all love it. So
yeah.
I would
did a little, but you're getting in the middle.
You know, that's what's weird about it. Like, a majority of the lyrics are Aerosmith.
Yeah.
Like, they changed some of it, but a lot of it is just what was written.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you guys a question before we move into KC's list. Would you say you've heard this version more than the original, or the original more than this version?
Oh, very much so. I've heard, this was the first introduction for me listening to Aerosmith.
Yeah.
Now, in Kevin's defense, he was a lot younger than Daryl Simmons. Yeah, I just think it's weird that you've got two musicians that are like, who the hell's who's Aerosmith? What the hell's an Aerosmith? Because we're talking about a band that had been around since the 60s. You know, it's not like they're a brand new band.
They really around since the 60s?
Yeah.
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 Damn.
Dude, right. Blow your mind, man. The Stones were around in the 50s. So
That I knew, because they're somehow still alive.
They're doing a new album.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah.
And didn't Mick Jagger just got somebody pregnant?
What the hell?
He's like Tracy Morgan. He just looks at people and gets them pregnant. I'm getting everybody pregnant up in here.
Get you pregnant. That's exactly how Mick Jagger said it.
Yeah. I have a question, to a little off track. Has anybody besides me heard the first new track from Blink 182?
I have.
And?
It is a super emotional song, but a little on the nose at the same time.
Okay, thank you. I don't love it. I don't hate it. And I swear to God,
they wrote it for them, and they could have just kept it with them.
It's not bad. Oh, it's just a little drudging, like a little slow. Yeah. And I swear to God, he's got an effect on his voice.
It probably does. Yeah.
I swear he does. Yeah. And
they literally mention Travis's plane crash.
Yep.
Mark's cancer scare.
Yep.
And the fact that Tom left and then came back, and they kind of thank Matt Skiba in the song.
Basically saying it shouldn't have taken all of these things to bring us back together. That's kind of what the song's about, which I get. It's fine.
Like I said, it's super emotional. If you're a big fan of Blink-182,
and I think
it's
that's why they released it as their first single, because it's for the fans. I get it. And it's not a bad song. It's not.
No.
But it's not blowing any doors off for me either. I don't know. It's not bad. If you guys haven't heard it, you go check it out. Blink's about to go out on tour. speaking of Aerosmith, they are also going out on tour. Actually, they're out on tour, and I'm going to see them. And we just got like an alert because Steven Tyler hurt his larynx, I guess, like his throat. He had to have some stuff done, and we were, this is so funny.
Yeah.
So they sent a blurb out, like a mass email telling everybody they're
going to walk this way.
They're going to.
And talk this way?
They're going to, well, you can't. So they're going, they were going to be postponing and keep your tickets because, you know, we're just, we just have to reschedule everything. And then we got the reschedule the other day, and damn. It's the same day it was originally. It wasn't rescheduled at all. We were like, wait, and what day were we supposed to go on? Yeah, and we were all like looking changed. Over it. We were very confused. Like, wait, what day were we supposed to go? Is that not it? And so, but we hope that Steven Tyler, you know,
yeah, pull through.
I mean, he's doing well, I think, but it's just, they were basically like, look, he's a little bit older than he used to be. It takes a little bit longer to recover than, and with that,
but he's also got Steven Tyler money. So.
True.
He's got probably got pretty decent doctors on the case. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he's one of those artists that I've talked about it many times, and I'll talk about it towards the end because I don't want to bring something up for a few minutes. But his voice, a lot of these artists who did that, like, high-pitched whatever, they can't do that anymore. But Steven Tyler still does what he always did, and I think that's kind of amazing.
It's very impressive.
Yeah, so. All right, we're going to go into KC's list. I personally think KC is trying to start shit this week, but we shall see. Let's just go ahead with his first pick. Take a look at what I've done. Used to rock in my basement, now I'm number one. And you're out on time, never standing on line. You want to try me? First, you better learn how to rhyme. I'm the pinnacle, that means I reign supreme. And I'm notorious, I'll crush you like a jelly bean. I'm bad.
Almost made it on my list.
Think of all those jelly beans you've crushed over the years. So this is LL Cool J.
Full of them just to crush them.
I'm bad. You just throw them in front of people, step on them, like, motherfucker.
Yeah, I'm bad.
This came off his second album, Bigger and Deffer, from 1987. You guys want to hear something interesting?
Yes.
This song samples the theme song from the television show SWAT, which I found a little amusing. Because in 2003, there was a movie called SWAT. And one of the stars was
Cool J.
Hello, Cool J. it samples a few other songs as well, including LL Cool J's Rock the Bells. Yep. Stick around for the 90s episode. You might hear that happens more than once. It hit number four on the Hot R&B Hip Hop chart and was his debut on the Hot 100 at number 84. This song, which is awesome, I love this song very much, might be one of my favorite LL Cool J songs, but this song is a testament to his skills as a rap artist. It's mostly about him letting the world know how hard he hits, and rightly so. I think that I saw him recently on something, like he was doing a live podcast or something, and they ask him if he can still spit, and he's like, yeah, and they give him a beat, and there he goes freestyling, and it's amazing. It's wonderful. It's like mind-blowing.
Because he's bad.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The album, which also contained the single I Need Love, the album itself was number one on the Billboard Hot or the Billboard Hip Hop charts and number three on the album 200 charts or whatever they call that one, which is a pretty big deal. I'm a big fan of LL Cool J and I was happy to see this, but Kev, you added this to your list. What about this song spoke to you? And then in a minute, we're going to talk about some other things.
For me, I thought it was just like a kind of an anthem on just total badassness that you can give yourself. And I think this is like one of the first times in rap you actually heard that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes. So this song also has some shots fired. We'll get into that. It's a weird thing for me, but we won't talk about it for a minute till we get to Kevin's third pick. But then we're gonna kind of loop back into this song when we talk about your third song. Do you know what I'm getting at, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Was it intentional? Like,
yeah. No, it wasn't. Okay. It's
like, is KC trying to start shit?
Jay, I think you're taking this too personal.
No. I was just curious if you was trying to start another rap battle.
And I'm just sitting here oblivious to the whole thing. I have no idea what's happening. I'm loving it.
So KC's next pick, Matt tried to get to, but it was too late because KC already had it. So they'll both enjoy this one.
Right is wrong when hype is written on the soul. They lie that style is truly our own thing, not the false disguise of showbiz. They lie totally from the soul, and in fact I can't deny. Strictly from the Dan called Stucky, and from me, myself, and I.
Hell yeah, De La Soul, Me, Myself, and I. What a great band.
Yeah.
This is one of those bands that I think you kind of forget about, and then you hear them, I'm like, oh, and you're like, oh, wait, I fucking love these guys. Yeah. Me, Myself, and I, Landing Just Under the Wire, 1989, and off their debut album, 3 Feet High and Rising. I was stunned. I was a little stunned to read that this was their only number one on the U.S. Billboard R&B chart. I guess I kind of get it, but I don't get it.
Yeah, I feel you. I'm the same way. This was definitely their most popular one, but they, you know, did a lot of great songs.
Yeah, they did. And I get, but I mean, we've talked about this on the show before. There's chart songs, and then there's just how does one explain it? There are musicians that don't necessarily chart, but it doesn't mean they're not like freaking wonderful and doing their own thing with their own crowd,
right?
And I guess that's kind of De La Soul. This song was certified gold, though. Sampled the Ohio Players, Funkadelic, and Dougie Fresh.
Mm-hmm.
All of them were sampled in the song. De La Soul member Postinus. How do you is
that Postinus?
Postinus. Yeah. I don't know. But what he had to say about the song is that was the second to last song recorded for that album. Tommy Boy was loving how the album was going, but they felt we needed an introduction song. That was the first time on this album where it was brought to our attention that we may need to make sure we have something that isn't so over someone's head. By the way, might be a little bit of a... He might be kind of answering our question about the chart stuff right there. Mace and Paul had already mentioned trying something with one of the Funkadelic records. We did the record like it was nothing.
By the way, shout out to freaking George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic and Parliament and Funkadelic, because they deserve a lot of credit when it comes to hip hop and during this time period.
You're not mistaken. And again, when we get into the 90s stuff, they're going to come up again. They get sampled a lot.
Yep.
A lot. And rightly so, because, I mean, Funkadelic is in Parliament Funkadelic and
Parliament, George Clinton, Funkadelic, they all deserve more they deserve way more royalties.
Everybody, have you heard? KC just fucked up a word.
Nice.
That was good.
I see what you did there.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
He was trying to say they deserve more respect and recognition. One of those, I'm sure, is where he was going.
Yeah, I mean, and money. They deserve way more money.
Well, you know, I don't disagree, but I think that George is pretty happy.
Yeah.
Seems like he's a pretty happy dude.
I mean, he was able to bring around a whole mothership on stage with
him. That's right.
Decades.
It took him a couple hours to get up there, but
Literally, I've been to one of his shows. Yeah, it does take him a few hours.
Oh god. Postinus also said of this song, we were surprised how big it got. Sometimes the simplest thing is what people can relate to. So there he gets what he had to say about this. I really, like I said, I really appreciate these guys as a group, because they seem to see the shift in rap heading towards something a bit edgier with artists like Ice-T and N.W.A. and the like. Mm. And De La Soul decided to give us something a little more mellow. They didn't really go the hardcore route, which I've always sort of appreciated, because sometimes you kind of need that palate cleanser. You know?
Yeah.
But Kevin, you added them. What made you decide to put this song on your mix?
Well, I always been a sucker for a fun rap group, and De La Soul is like one of those fun rap groups akin to A Tribe Called Quest. Leaders of the New School. You know, it's got a good beat.
I just got to tell everybody that the foreshadowing this week into next week is amazing. And if you want to hear more about what Kev was just talking about, you definitely need to listen to the 90s episode, because what Kevin was just bringing up is going to be hit on pretty hard in the 90s rap episode.
Mm-hmm.
De La Soul and Tribe Called Quest and a few other bands and the native tongue stuff. So we're going to get into that a little bit next week. So that's very important and it's very cool. And when I say every once in a while I get educated on this show, this is one of the things I got educated about. And so I love to share that with other people. So check out next week's episode as well, because Kevin is bringing the info, guys. I'm just saying. Kevin, there it is. All right. So Kev has one more, and I'm telling you, man, I think he's trying to start a whole new battle thing, but we're gonna play it anyway. I told you there was an artist you're going to hear another time this week. Well, here it is.
I ain't with that. You can't forget that. You took my style. I'm taking it back, coming back, like Return of the Jedi. Sucker MCs in the place that said I could only rock rhyme and only rock crowds, but never rock records. How you like me now?
God, you're never going to convince me that Will Smith wasn't just growing up listening to Kool Moe Dee all the time.
You know, yeah, I mean, back in the early days of rap, yeah, I mean, yeah. He wouldn't be the only one.
No, but I mean, his style, especially his 80s, like late 80s and early 90s style, was very similar to Kool Moe Dee.
Oh, very much so.
So this is How You Like Me Now by Kool Moe Dee. We talked about the album itself a few minutes ago when I brought up Wild Wild West. Well, KC gives us the title track off that album, again, from 1987. It's the first single from that album. This became his first song to appear on the Billboard Hot R&B, reaching number 22. Here's the fun thing. This is where things get interesting. LL Cool J's I'm Bad was the first song to land him on the Hot 100. And what I didn't mention was that part of the song was to address a certain rapper who LL Cool J had beef with. Primarily, on that list was Kool Moe Dee. And this track was Kool Moe Dee's diss track towards LL Cool J.
Well,
when you trying to tell me that. Kevin starting shit. Here's the thing. I don't know why I have such a hard time or think it's weird to picture LL Cool J and Kool Moe Dee dissing people, because they just don't seem the type. Yeah. But there you go. It happened. If you take a look at the album cover, you're going to see a little something going on there on the album cover. And that might be a red Kangol cap crushed under Kool Moe Dee's car tire.
Oh,
snap.
Hang on. Let me look this up.
So Kool Moe Dee and LL Cool J are actually considered one of rap's first beefs. But unlike some later artists, they always kept their fight to lyrics. And Kool Moe Dee has stated that he actually respects.
Yeah, that's right there.
Yep. Kool Moe Dee has actually stated that he respects LL's rap abilities. He just felt that LL never respected the earlier performers who blazed the way. One of the things about Kool Moe Dee is that he was both a pioneer of rap and one of the few that grew with it as it began to expand. That's why I like it. That's why I like him and this song, but I didn't pick it. Kev, you put it on your mix. So why don't you put it
right on the cover, too.
Yes, he did.
Jeez. Yes, he Have you did. Seen this, Kevin?
No, I haven't.
Hang on for 2 seconds. Here's a link. Like, yeah. Just straight up the cover.
Yeah, there's a red Kangol under the tire.
Let me check this out. Mm-hmm. Oh, damn. It's not like a
montage or a collage or anything of other things. It is, I am running over LL Cool J's Kangol.
Yeah. Wow. He just noticed that. LL probably lost the hat. It probably blew it in the wind, and it just happened to be on this field.
It was an accident.
In a bad neighborhood in New York City, I'm assuming, and he just ran over it with his brand new Jeep. So,
photo taken in Cabrini Green.
You guys got
day in the life.
Jeez. You got to understand, and I do want to hear Kev's reasons, but LL came in, and he was a young, like,
oh,
young
yeah, he was
artist,
like 17.
And he was. You know, he's killing it. He's a little cocky at first, you know.
Yeah.
Rightly so. But I appreciate.
Wait, hang on. Did LL shoot back in Mama Said Knock You Out with the line, How You Like Me Now?
Yes.
Okay.
But seeing how that might be on somebody's list next week, yours, Matt. This beef isn't ending here today, guys. We're taking it into next week.
Hang on. Spoiler alert on that one. Yeah.
We're taking it into next
week. I had never noticed that.
Yeah. But, okay. Oh, yeah. That's what we'll get into that next week about what that song's all about.
You know, taking in consideration, like when we brought to go into the 90s when beefs were real beefs, this beef just seems adorable.
But it was
hey man, talk shit about you.
But this was before it got out of hand. Like, it was all done lyrically and through albums. There was no physical stuff ever.
Nobody getting murdered.
Like, running over a red Kangol hat is almost funny. Like, it's like, I'm insulting you, but I'm also being a little tongue-in-cheek about it. And he has, like I said, he's come out and said, I actually respect LL's ability as a rapper. Mm-hmm. I just don't think he gives enough respect. So his problem isn't that he thinks he's bad at what he does or doesn't deserve attention. He just thinks that LL didn't, you know, show enough love for people before him. I don't know. You know, that's not something for me. I have no idea if that's correct or not. But this was all done, you know, lyrically, and it helped create some wonderful songs. I would bet that part of these guys loves that it happened because it inspired them to make some of their biggest hits.
Oh, yeah.
And unlike things that are going on currently, you know, where they finally made an arrest on a guy that they believe is connected to Tupac, you know, almost 30 years later.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. But,
or at least a guy they're going to try to frame for it.
Stuff gets taken out. Well, from what I read, they just think he was involved. I don't know that they think he was. Like, I didn't.
Yeah. You know. He's the guy with the red bow tie.
Yes. He was on the grassy knoll too, from what I come to understand. But Kev, real quick, why'd you add this song? What made you put this song on your mix this week?
For me, I mean, the sampling of James Brown there, I kind of like that.
Yeah.
But also, it's another badass, you know, song, you know, about how you're a badass. And I kind of respect that.
Yeah.
I didn't know about the beef part, but.
So it wasn't intentional, is what you said.
No, it was not intentional. Accidental. I did not know about the beef.
Kev's right. We're going to hit on some of this. No, we're not going to get real hardcore into it, but in the 90s episode, because there was a lot more, you know, beef going on in the 90s.
I mean, N.W.A. with Ice Cube. Then you got Jay-Z versus Nas. I mean, oh, and not to mention Biggie versus Tupac.
Yeah, East Side, West Side, the whole connection.
Yeah, and we can go on and on.
And the thing about it is like, for me, a guy like me who was out there, and I probably not just me. There were probably a whole bunch of people out there that we just like the music, so.
Yeah,
I had no loyalty. Like I loved Notorious B.I.G. I loved Snoop Dogg. I loved N.W.A. Like my brain's not working that way. Like I'm like, these guys are just good. Actually, that's not true. I was talking about this earlier. I was never what I would consider a massive N.W.A. fan, but I might have been a big fan of another band that's going to get talked about next week that might have something to do with N.W.A. Not that I have a problem with NWA. I like their stuff. I just wasn't listening to them, rightly so. I was a little white kid in the suburbs of Cincinnati.
I don't think you could have like said the whole name out loud.
Yeah. No,
that would have been problematic.
I couldn't. But I mean,
you could try.
There were certain bands that I think, like, I knew who they were. And we all knew Straight Outta Compton. We all knew, you know, a few other songs, but I wasn't quite immersed in that world yet. The rap I knew was a lot of the stuff we just played this week. So it took a little bit longer for me to get in. Like at first I did not like gangster rap at all. And it took me a little while. And there were certain bands that I think just started grabbing my attention. And I'm like, oh wait, well that shit's really good though. There's a lot of talent behind that. That kind of drew me in. We'll get into a little bit of that next week, but this was this week's list, and I think they were pretty good, man. Technical difficulties aside at the beginning of the show and me being off my game a little bit, this was a lot of fun for me, and I think we really pulled out the stops. We did it. We had done another 80s rap show, and when I went in, I'm like, God, we've already talked about quite a few, and it's going to be hard for me to pull stuff and then it wasn't. And then inevitably I'm like, oh no, I can pull way more. like yeah. It just sort of happened. And then, like I said, you guys gave me your list and I'm like, oh, well shit, man. I didn't even think about Paid in Full. You know, I didn't even think about the Fat Boys. My brain wasn't going there. I did obviously think of Kool Moe Dee, but we went a different direction. You know, De La Soul. I guess for me, I was thinking, and because it was 1989, I was considering De La Soul more of a 90s band, but, you know, their first album was 1989. So what do you guys think overall? Like, how would you think of this week and the lists and, you know?
It was a fun episode, man. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, we
brought back memories.
We laughed.
Old beefs.
Brought back memories of Cher and brought back... Do you believe... A little Zapp and Roger in there.
Yeah, a little. Yeah.
We foreshadowed with a little California love. All that's at the beginning of the show, guys.
Maybe I should have done Frampton Come Alive, too.
Oh, damn it. I didn't think of that one.
Totally missed it. Yeah. That would
have been good. Oh, if you guys have not gone and listened to, actually quite a few of you have listened to the Pat Fraley interview. And if you haven't checked right before this episode, our Kevin Eastman episode dropped and, wow. So check that out. It's wonderful. And it just was meant so much to us. And, we've been kind of dropping it on the show. Coming next, we have an interview with DC Glenn from Tag Team. So
that was awesome too.
It was a great interview.
Really need to listen to that.
Very inspirational, and we didn't have to ask a lot of questions. Yeah. Which he even calls it out.
Yeah, he calls it out.
He's like,
look, you guys only asked like two questions.
Right? Now, with that being said, we interact with him a lot.
We had more than that, but yeah.
We interact with him a lot. We just didn't have to ask the questions because he was answering them before we could. And but he was great. A lot of fun to talk to on the show. So that one's coming up as well. And interview with Full House, and so we've got some not the cast members of Full House, the members from the band Full House.
F-O-O-L
House. So they are a 90s tribute band, a lot of fun, and if they're out in your area, which Matt, I think they're going to be out in your area soon. So
yeah,
if you get the chance, go out and
go check them out.
So real quick, I wanted to bring up, I'd been talking about it, life changing. Saw Peter Gabriel.
How was that? Amazing. That sounds fun.
Listen, I'm not this guy, and Matt's this guy. Matt is the crier. There were at least twice where it was hard not to tear up a little bit. And my wife, so I think a lot of people know Peter Gabriel in, you know, Sledgehammer and you know, In Your Eyes and Steam and they big time, right? They get that. And then there are those of us who are what I would consider Peter Gabriel fans. I know our man Skiznot out there is a big Peter Gabriel fan. And he and I have kind of talked about it. And Peter's been doing some cool stuff, like his new album, Panopticon. They've been releasing one track every full moon. Just something.
What?
Yeah. So, and they've all been really good. So my whole life I'd wanted to see Peter Gabriel. So my wife bought me tickets for my birthday and we went, and she was kind of a sideline fan. She's like, you know, I like what I'd heard. And at one point in the concert, she looks over to me and she's like, I keep tearing up. And she's like, this is beautiful. And I'm like, yes, yes. Like, now
you get it.
You feel this. And I always wanted to feel it live. Like, I want to know, oh my God, the concert was amazing. The show he puts on is amazing. He has, like, the whole show, he got different artists. He hired different artists to do like visual art pieces that will play on screens behind them as they're performing songs. And each one he's like, I want to give credit to. And then he says the name of the artist and where they're from and thanks them for creating the piece. He constantly all night is just gushing about the different people performing with him and the stuff that they do and how amazing they are. I don't know, man. It was mind-blowing, and he was wonderful. And it's so weird to see this guy who's now like 72 years old and up on stage, and I'm like, this is Sledgehammer.
Still kicking ass.
And when he does Sledgehammer, everybody loses their mind. But the most impactful thing, and seeing how I've never seen him live before, it might be something they do a lot, I don't know, but they end the show with one of my favorite songs. Literally, they do a two-song encore. The screen comes down. They have this circular screen, right? And it's bizarre. One of the screens is circular, and it raises and lowers throughout the show. And it's just a giant picture of Stephen Biko, and they're singing this song, and they keep that beat, that boom, 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 going as one by one, like Peter Gabriel walks off the stage with his hand, like his fist raised, and then one by one, as the beat continues, each member of the band keeps walking off the stage with their fist raised. And it's just like you're like just feeling the impact of the song. We talk about that song on our political songs episode. If you don't know the song Biko, please go listen and then read the story behind it. It all deals with apartheid and all that stuff. So it was wonderful, mind blowing. What's really cool is two nights before I went to that, we went to a 10 o'clock showing of Stop Making Sense. We were talking about this because I'd seen Stop Making Sense back in like 1992 on the TV. We put in the VHS, you know, my mom, my stepdad, and I loved it. Yeah. Oh my God. We took my 17-year-old daughter and she didn't really know what to expect and she loved it. And she got, we left that theater. First of all, I think she now has a mild crush on David Byrne, as do I, as should everyone.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm like, we watched it in the theater and I looked at my wife. I'm like, I kind of want to go see it again. It is just, when they say one of the best concert videos of all time, they're not kidding. I don't know how it can get much better. It is mind blowing, incredible. And this is like 1984, man. It's so good. If you guys haven't, it's still playing. I don't know how much longer it's playing at the theaters, but if you haven't or you've considered it, go check it out. It's well worth it. Even if you've seen it before, it's so much better on the big screen in 4K. You know, the sound is amazing. I would love to talk to David Byrne or Tina Weymouth, any of them, Chris Frantz, I don't care. I just want to know a few things. And the one thing I really want, I'm about to get with Stephen Tobolowsky again. Like, do you know this?
Yeah.
So it was so weird that we talked to Stephen Tobolowsky and some of the stuff he told us. Now I'm watching it again and it's like hitting more impactfully.
Yeah.
But who planned this? Like, who thought this is the way we're going to do this show? And the other thing you kind of figure out is, you know, David Byrne's a weird guy and he does weird dance moves and stuff. But as you're watching it, you're like, all of this is intentional. And every one of those moves to him means something. And it coincides with the song. And I don't know. Go see it, is what I'm saying. It's wonderful. Yeah. So I had kind of a fun weekend last week with going to see that and then checking out or going to see Peter Gabriel, and it was pretty awesome. So yay me. What have you guys been up to?
Yeah, not that.
No, just working on tours. Oh, by the way, if you're around the Cincinnati area and want to feel a little spooky this Halloween season,
Kevin, come out, stand outside your house.
Yeah.
They'll hold the boom I'm already of his head just playing.
I'm
the
already doing the that.
I was gonna say that, Matt. You said holding the boombox, and I was gonna say playing tubular bells with like that's so messed up, man.
Like, you wanted to feel spooky, right?
Yeah. He's doing his haunted Mount Healthy tour. Kev, is there a website where they can go kind of check out some info on that?
Just go to AmericanLegacyTours.com and look out for the Mount Healthy is Haunted Tour.
Link will be in the show notes.
And if that is too confusing for you, just drop us an email. I will make sure KC gets it. So then he can give you more information as well.
And then I'll stalk your house.
And then he will stalk your house.
Yeah.
Matt, you went to a con this weekend?
I went to Horror at the Drive-In.
Oh, that's what it was.
Put on by the Kansas City Horror Club, and it was awesome as always. I got to see a bunch of friends I don't see very often, and watched a couple of great movies up on the drive-in screen. Saw, I should tell you, this was called the Double Bacon with Cheese Double Feature, and it was two movies starring Kevin Bacon. So they showed what I pretty much determined was the redneck version of Dune, Tremors.
I love Tremors, though.
And I really shouldn't say that because I haven't seen Dune, so I should probably watch that.
I am kind of interested in hearing about a redneck version of Dune.
Right.
I mean, I saw some similarities.
Well, there's a giant worm in some dirt.
If you move, there's a giant worm in the dirt, and they're trying not to attract the worm by moving.
I'm sure that the creature from Tremors had to have been inspired by Dune.
Oh, it had to have been, And, I mean, they look very similar. I'm pretty sure I've seen mashups on like three different sites of
of the Graboids and
Graboids, Shia LaBeouf. Great name.
But yeah, so they showed Tremors and the original Friday the 13th. So it's pretty awesome. And
they could have played like Stir of Echoes. I think Stir of Echoes is kind of a,
that would have been pretty interesting.
Yeah. Forgotten but really good Kevin Bacon horror film, man. Like it's really good.
Kevin Bacon's kind of come around to his horror roots now. Like he used to kind of shy away from, and realize that horror fans are awesome and they support you.
Yes, but in his defense, a lot of people did get typecast and didn't make it out of horror movies. And
true.
He's not the only one. Matthew McConaughey and
Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah, no. They've all tried to. I think Jennifer Aniston.
She never really shed that leprechaun stigma.
I think she has some things she would maybe not want remembered more than Leprechaun. I don't know.
Haircut.
Say Ferris Bueller's Day Off the series.
What?
She's in that? Yeah, she plays Jeannie.
Did not know that.
Ooh, bad show. bad show.
That was a goof.
Yeah, that was a mistake.
I didn't even realize that. You brought it up.
We're about to end this episode, but I don't know if you know why they made Parker Lewis. That's why they made Ferris Bueller. Because Parker Lewis Can't Lose was over on another network, and it's basically Ferris Bueller, and it was doing well. And so they're like, well, we're going to release a Ferris Bueller series, which had nothing to do with the movie. And the first episode, he comes out and chainsaws a cardboard cutout of Matthew Broderick as Ferris Bueller. And he's like, oh, they made a movie about me, which makes no sense in the timeline. And it's just dumb, and he's not Ferris. This kid's kind of an asshole, and Parker Lewis was a much better show.
Yeah. Yeah, the Swatch Watches.
Yes, synchronized Swatches. It's so good. Oh, God, man. Kubiak.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Went on to be an ER.
He was on quite a bit. He was in Twister, and you know they're making a sequel to Twister?
Really?
Twister 2.
Nope.
This time there's no shark.
It's called Twisters, and
there's two.
I don't know if Helen Hunt's, I should hope she's going to be in it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, two of the cast members are no longer with us.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Can't have that's true. Them, but hopefully the rest
died chasing tornadoes.
Or maybe they could write it off that they died in a hurricane or something or other natural disaster.
Some other storm issue.
Yeah.
Flood happened.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he just.
Sean Whalen, you going to be in it?
I hope so.
Shot it.
I follow Sean Whalen on Facebook and TikTok, and
follow him on Instagram.
People Under the Stairs.
He's got a movie called Crust coming out. Come on the show and talk about it, man.
Hell yeah,
man. We already reached out. Let's go do it. Come on.
I could reach out to him again. He'd be great.
Calling you out.
He'd be a lot of fun to talk to, man. People Under the Stairs alone would be interesting. Hell yeah. As hell to talk about.
Weird ass gimp movie.
It's a weird movie. Not as scary as I think people remember it being. It's not really that kind of horror, but it's
got good. That kid from Mighty Ducks in it.
I think his name is Emilio.
We're just overlapping so many movies.
Right now. Oh, God. So with that being said, guys, please stick around next week. Check out all our social media stuff. Obviously, it's up there and it's out. Might be wanting to pay attention to that YouTube channel. We might be dropping a few things down. We haven't in a while. And I have a few, I think, Rewind toys that I need to finish up and send over. And then Matt and I have been discussing some movie stuff that we really want to get back on it. There's just, guys, when I say that life, when we keep talking about how difficult things have been,
it's straight in the nuts.
I'm telling you, it hasn't let up. It's just gotten a little worse. But in part of that worse, maybe things got better. So we'll talk about it down the road. But something it's really shitty happened. But from said shitty might be coming some really cool and wonderful things. So
you get a happy slide whistle.
Hey, happy slide whistles.
So good things are happening and rough things are happening, but things are happening here on the show and we've got more to come. And we're so happy to have you guys. We hope you stick around. Drop us a line. We'd love that. And come back next week when we talk about 90s rap. That's everything. We love you guys. We appreciate you guys. You guys are awesome. And we hope that until next we speak, you remember to stay awesome.
Awesome.
There are times
that's such a weird way.
Yeah.
Like your head is a big old bucket filled with fuzzy dreams. Cause you wish you were a Muppet, but you can't play the music and you can't light the lights in it's all you can do just to make it through any more of these lonely nights. So you grab your favorite mixtape and you pop it in the slot, and you scream two words along with all the nerds, cause right now it's all you've got.
Stay cool.